Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out, it's only films to be buried with.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a flying trapeze artist, and I love films. As Mike Tyson once said, I'm a dreamer. I have to dream and reach for the stars. And if I miss a star, I grab a handful of clouds. Speaking of stars, watching Lily James in Mamma Mia 2 really showed me what a movie star performance looks like. And it's not easy. She's absolutely brilliant. She is brilliant, Mike Tyson. You're not wrong. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Sharon Stone, Kevin Smith, Edgar Wright, James Acaster, and even Dead Dambles. This week, it's the brilliant sketco, stand-up, and award-winning writer, Rose Johnson. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get an extra 20 minutes with Rose, where we talk in depth about beginnings and endings. You get an incredible secret, and you also get the whole episode uncut and as a video and ad-free. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Rose Johnson is a brilliant sketco, stand-up, actor, writer, and one of my favourite people. She's the final part of the Birthday Girls trilogy I have been waiting to complete. We've had B.T. Edmondson, and we've had Camille Chan, and now we finally get the brilliant Rose Johnson. We recorded it on Zoom, and it was so much fun. Rose is absolutely brilliant. I think you're going to love this one. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 154 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by an actor, a writer, a novelist, a sketco, a commercial actor, a stand-up comedian, a woman, a hero, and one of my favourite people. Please welcome to the show, it's the brilliant Rosanna Johnson!
Hi, thanks for having me. I went a bit west. You said actor and then commercial actor.
You think it was the wrong order?
Well, I would say, do you consider commercial acting like different to normal acting? You're like, that's not, I have to mention that separately.
Yeah, I tell you why, and I mean this truly, I have nothing but major respect for commercial acting because I genuinely don't think I could do it. I think it's a higher art. Like I've seen you, I make you do all your self-tapes for me and it blows my mind. Because I just don't think I could pull it off as convincingly. I think it's genuinely brilliant.
I mean, if you wanted the money you would.
But I don't know if I could do the face that you have to do when you, like, sniff a bun or something.
Oh, yeah. See, that's my, like, absolute forte. Yeah. I'm more successful in commercials than I am in any other sphere.
Can we, for the Patreon, I want to give them, like, a special gift on the visuals, if you get the video. Yeah. Can you show us, you've picked up a bun and you sniff it and you cannot believe your luck.
Okay, my phone's the bun.
Okay. It's fucking magnificent. It's magnificent.
The thing is, though, I would say that's not even my niche. My niche is
What's your niche? Is
like funny faces. So my reaction would be, I pick up the bun and... like there's a tiny gorilla on it. Don't ask me why, but it's something.
Well, it's gorilla buns. We're selling gorilla buns.
Some ad agencies come up with a thing that's like the thing is, there's going to be a gorilla on the bun. And I pick it up and I'm like, I'm going about to eat this bun. And there's a gorilla on it. Ready?
There's a fucking gorilla on it. Go on.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, if you've ever thought, I'm not going to sign up for the Patreon, now's the time to see the magic and wonder of Rose spotting a gorilla on a bun.
Yeah, anything like that. It's my forte. Had to do one this morning, self-tape.
Please tell me everything.
Nothing like it. Well, just waking up of a morning on the weekend, like, open your eyes, birds are singing, sun shining. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to have a nice lazy morning. Oh no, I forgot. I've got a self-tape for an advert that's due in on Monday. Put up my sad backdrop in my living room. You've got to put up a big backdrop because the casting directors, they can't be seeing inside your house. They can't imagine. They've got to have a plain backdrop. They can't. If there's a sofa in the frame, they can't
see
that.
You as the gorilla bun girl. They're like, gorilla bun girl wouldn't have
exactly.
A sofa.
Exactly. Sofa. No. She has to have a plain grey background. So you've like hoist up your sad background, put your ring light on, put your makeup on. In this one, I had to dress up as an electrician.
What was your electrician gear?
Well, I wore jeans and then a blue fleece, which was actually outstanding.
Incredible.
Really good. Had to do some really prime faces in that one. And there were some big reactions.
So you're an electrician who's finding stuff on the wires? Like, what was the premise?
Okay, so the thing is, I don't think I can tell you the premise of the advert because it hasn't been out yet. But basically, an electrician turns up to a job and then something very wacky and unexpected happens on the job.
Mm.
And the electrician is surprised.
Right. Any dialogue or just faces?
Dialogue. I had to say, get ready for it. Okay, I'll do it. And then, but halfway through, I see the wacky thing. Okay, right. So someone's saying something and I go, yeah, that shouldn't be a problem.
It's so good what she's doing. Here's what I'd describe for the listener. She's saying there's not going to be a problem. And then it's very quickly caught her attention that there might actually be a problem. And she's trying to keep it under a hat in front of the customer. But it's also clear, like, don't follow her eyes or you'll see what the problem is.
Yeah.
Whatever you're selling, I'm buying it, Rose.
Okay, good. Yeah, so I did all that. Obviously, my poor husband, Daniel Cook, is having to read in the lines. He doesn't want to be doing that on a Saturday morning. And then, classic, forgot to do an ident. For those of you who are listening who don't know what an ident is, it's where you've got to do, say, your name, your agent, where you're based, or what commercials you've done, blah, blah, blah. So I'd already got changed out of my electrician outfit, had to put the electrician outfit back on, hoist my sad backdrop back up to do the ident, did that, took it all down again, got changed, realised I hadn't said my agent on the ident, had to do it all again. Just a real ball
ache.
What's
this sad background you're hoisting around? What's on it?
It's like a big sheet of grey material that you put up behind you so your house isn't in the shot. But then I think it's mad because I'm like, you know that this is a self-tape. You know that I'm doing this at home. But they can't. You've got to have a plain background.
Yeah, because if it doesn't match, you know, if you've got a background and they're thinking you're an electrician, but in your background you've got, I don't know, lots of wood, perhaps. And they're thinking, what, is she a carpenter? I don't understand.
What, electricians don't like wood?
Well, I don't know. In their head, they're going, well, she's good with wood. She's not. I don't know if she's good with electrics.
I think for commercials especially, if you're having to use your imagination, you're not the right person for the job. So they need to look at you because you've got like 20 seconds, haven't you, really, to go like, oh, that's the character. That's the, you know, straight away. So if they're having to be like, well, but there's like, for example, in my living room, I have got a pink velvet sofa. So they might be going, I can't, I'm going to have to imagine that's not there.
I'm not saying
electricians can't have pink velvet sofas. Good luck
to them. A lot of them do.
Anyone can. I didn't think I was going to have a pink velvet sofa until there I was in DFS. And I was like, well, I guess that's what I've bought a pink velvet sofa.
I guess that's a bit of me, you thought.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I'd say to anyone listening, it's a curse. Don't do it. Constantly thinking I'm going to be dropping stuff on it, have dropped stuff on it. And yeah, it's just a nightmare. I've basically just covered it all up with throws now because it's, can't even appreciate the pink.
Pink throws.
No, not even pink throws. Darker coloured throws.
It's not, that's stressful, isn't it? It's depressing getting nice stuff. That's why I only wear black t-shirts, because I can just absolutely cake them in shit and no one knows. tell me this. Oh, no, I'll tell you something that I now try to take into, like, as a inspirational thing. I hate doing idents on self-tapes. It's literally my worst thing. My worst thing is introducing myself in, like, you know, and like in a circle, maybe a read-through or a new job. And let's just go around and say our name. I genuinely think I have, like, close to a panic attack because you're thinking, do I make this funny? Do I just be straight? Like, oh, God, I'm so stressful. And when you have to go your ident before you do a self-tape, if the self-tape's good, I reckon I can lose it on the ident because I look so awkward saying my fucking name.
Oh, but do you know what? You can put the ident at the end, apparently.
Nice.
So they can see the scene first and then spoil it at the end. Once I got, so I'm exactly the same, get so stressed out about when it's going around the circle, I once accidentally introduced myself as Toes. She said, Toes. I'm Toes.
During lockdown, you did what so many people threatened to do and literally no one I know actually did, which is write a fucking novel. You wrote a novel.
Yeah, I did. It's mad.
Congratulations. So impressed.
Yeah, thank you.
How was it?
Yeah, I had started writing it before lockdown, but I had written about 10,000 words. So a novel's about 100,000 words. So I'd written a bit of it. And I hadn't really planned it. And then in lockdown, when everything stopped and our industry just shut down, and I obviously, as a massive catastrophizer, was like, well, that was a nice career. I guess I'll have to retrain. What's my normal fallback? Oh, yes, I work in restaurants. Oh, they're all closed too. Okay, cool. Cool. So I had a breakdown where I was just like, it's all over. And then I was like, I'm someone that needs to be busy. I've got to have a task. I can't just sit at home and be like, well, I can't just submit to fate. I was like, I need to do something. Whereas my husband, Dan, you remember in the first lockdown, it was so nice and sunny.
Yeah.
He was just like, I'm just going to sunbathe all day and I'm fine with that. I was like, no, I'm going to sit inside in like my weird damp spare room writing a novel that's set in winter. And I needed a project. And I mean, it's an insane thing to do. To write a novel, it's mad, it's so long,
the hardest. Yeah,
but then I also would say it sort of started off, it's almost like you sort of like have a dare with yourself where you're like, imagine if I just wrote this as if I was writing a full novel, imagine if I just did that and I just assumed that I was doing that, and then the further along you get, you're like, I am doing that, and then you sort of make a dare with yourself, a bet with yourself, you're sort of like, it was a really good exercise in just doing things that seem unachievable and going, which I'm not very good at normally. I don't finish projects. I have loads of ideas. I start them. I don't finish them. It was such a good exercise in just like making a bet on yourself and going, imagine, just pretend to be a person that believes in themselves and just does this.
Guys, that's so fucking cool. You should give a TED talk. That is a really, really, really good writer's tip. That is great.
Oh, yeah, but then when I finished it and I reread it, I was like, this is dog shit.
But you shouldn't have taken that day, you
shouldn't
idiot.
Have taken the bet. Yeah, like, it's a mad thing to do. But I would also say it's the thing that I've done, the reason why I enjoyed it. It's like, it's hard, obviously, because there's so much you have to produce, the volume of stuff, that it can't all be amazing. You have to just, you can't stop and agonize over every sentence. You have to just get in flow, I guess, and just write. But I would say that it's the thing that I've done where I have most just been able to use my voice and not have to wait for anyone to give me permission. Like in telly, you're just constantly being like, well, this is what it will be like. It will be good. It will be good. I will do this thing and this is what it will be like. And you're having to wait for someone to say, yes, okay, you can do this like first stage. You can do a proposal and then, oh, you can do an outline and then you can do a script. And then at all of those points, there will be feedback and there will be criticism and there will be notes and you have to change the thing that was your first idea. Not for the worse, often for the better, sometimes for the worse, but it's lots of voices and it's lots of people that you're trying to please. Whereas when you write a novel, it's just your voice and you don't have any feedback really. And so that as well is incredibly rewarding as someone who's not really been able to do that before. in obviously the pandemic wasn't really doing stand-up. I'd say stand-up is also a similar thing. Although with stand-up, I would say no, because you get an immediate response from... Yeah, you get immediate feedback from the audience. Yeah. You know if something isn't working. Whereas with the novel, like I said, you're taking a bet. You're going, well, this might be shit, but I'm going to finish it. So,
Rose, I forgot to tell you something. Ah, fuck. It's bad because you've just done that self-tape as well. And your books, your book might be coming out soon. And it's a shame. But it kind of depends on how you feel about these things. But I should have told you maybe before I asked what you've been up to, because this is probably more, what's the word? Pressing? It's more, a bit more pressing. You've died.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you've died. And how did you die?
Okay. Now, I'd love to just say peacefully in my sleep, but just because of, like, how things happen in my life, I'm almost certain it would be one of those really embarrassing deaths. Like, did you read that news story about that guy who they found inside a dinosaur statue?
No.
In Spain, and he'd gone in to get his phone and got stuck and just died in this statue. And I think it will be something like that. And the one I was thinking of was, did you see that news story a few years ago about a girl at a festival who dropped her phone in a portaloo, down the portaloo, and then she went in to get it and got stuck.
Oh,
and
God.
The fire brigade had to get her out, and then she was called Poo Girl.
Oh, God.
I feel like it's going to be something like that, and it'll probably be like I've dropped my phone somewhere and I've gone to get it, and then I've got stuck and I've died. And it's like, basically the sadness of me having died is overshadowed by, like, the stupid nature of my death, the ridiculous nature of my death.
So you went down a portaloo and got stuck, but...
Yeah.
With your head in the poo.
Yeah. To give you an example, on my wedding day, I was really looking forward to... I wanted to have like a really small wedding. I was like, let's just go to a registry office, book a pub, have a party. My husband-to-be was like, no, we'll have a big do. And I was thinking, yeah. And who's organising that then? Muggins here.
This control freak over here.
Yes, exactly. It's going to be absolutely horrible. So yeah, obviously I lost my mind organising it. But one of the things I was really looking forward to was like, I'm really looking forward to that moment where I get to the top of the aisle and he'll say something to me. And I was like, I want to know what he'll say to me.
Oh, you mean like the thing he sort of quietly says to you, not in front of you look beautiful or something like that.
Yeah, I thought that'll be a lovely moment.
Yeah.
And I got to the top of the aisle and we were getting married in a theatre down in Dorset in this place called Lyme Regis. It's a theatre called the Marine Theatre. It's beautiful. If you're thinking of getting married by the sea, go there. I got to the top of the aisle and went to go up the steps and tripped over. Just fell out, just tripped onto the stage. Didn't hear anything. The thing I heard him say was, oh, are you okay?
But what you heard was caring. You heard him caring for you.
Brad, it wasn't what I wanted. And I just think, like, as life milestones go, the death's going to be... It's going to be something like either, getting stuck in a portaloo after my phone or, like, tripping over... it's going to be the most stupid thing, the most stupid accident.
Did the fact that you tripped on the steps, did that play on your mind for the rest of the wedding during the
ceremony? It's played on my mind for the rest of my life since,
So the rest of it sort of paled, you don't really remember it, you're just still thinking about it.
Yeah, but also I do have a tendency to like focus on, I'll remember the things that went wrong. I'm a pessimist, I'm a cynic.
Did people laugh?
Yes. Of course they did. I did it. And then I think everyone was like, and then I went, yes, okay. Because I wanted to make it okay. It was a comedy. It was like a sitcom. I went, yes, yes. And then everyone laughed. In fact, I remember Susie Ruffle laughing very hard.
Well, look, Jennifer Lawrence won her Oscar and fell up the stairs. And everyone gave her a standing ovation and thought it was incredibly charming and made her relatable. That's you. You're the Jennifer Lawrence of Sketco.
Thank you. Committed to Sketco even on my wedding day.
Even on your wedding day. Do you worry about death, Rose Johnson?
No. I would say, okay, so I would say I'm quite a pessimist. This is going to sound really awful and depressing.
Right.
But it's fine. I'm a massive overthinker and I do struggle with like anxiety, you know, just being fine mentally. So I'm not scared of death because I just think I'll have a bit of peace. Do you know
that.
What I mean? Is I that awful?
That. No, that was much less depressing than I thought it would be.
And I think when I say that, I think people probably listen to this and think she's depressed, but I'm not. Mm. I just am quite a pessimist. I'm quite a cynic. I'm like, it's hard to articulate. I just sort of don't think that it would be that bad. Like sometimes I think I was trying to do stand up about this, and I think actually I was doing stand up about this, and then that fucking Bo Burnham has basically done this in his special. But I was trying to write a bit and it didn't really work because I think people found it too depressing. But like, I would love to be dead for like a month.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when you're like, just a month of just being dead. But that obviously, in any context, when you say, I wish I was dead, then you go, that you're depressed,
people
you're suicidal.
You.
No, I'm not suicidal. I don't want to kill myself. But just if it happened, I wouldn't mind. I'd be fine.
I think I had a business idea in my 20s, which was like putting people in a coma for a month. So you could just sort of switch off for a month.
Yeah.
And we'll look after you. And while you're in the coma, we fill you with like vitamins and feed you well and put like muscle things on you. So you actually, when you come out, you're fitter and healthier.
I reckon you could write a film about this. I reckon this could be a massive film. Don't you think?
Coma Vacation. All right. Anyone listening, I own that. And we're pitching that.
That's Brad's. But, you know, I also have those things where, like, do you ever feel sometimes like, did you ever, like, fantasize about maybe being in, like, a minor road accident where you break an arm and you just think, you have to do nothing? You like, you know, the other day when I tore my calf muscle, we both bust up our legs at the same time, didn't we?
Not together, but in the same week.
And I was not allowed to move. I was like, had to stay sat on my sofa for a week. And that was fine. Normally, like I said, I need to be busy. I have to have a project because I feel like if I'm not being productive, then problems. I feel guilty. I find it difficult to switch off and enjoy my downtime. But if someone has said to me, you are forbidden from moving, you have to just do this. Oh, then I'm free and easy.
Yeah.
I've got Miss Congeniality on. I've got the popcorn out. Middle of the day. Don't mind. You know,
I don't fantasize about minor car accidents because I actually don't like injuries. Like I'd sort of rather be dead than break a leg. Do you know what I mean?
You were quite desperate when you hurt your knee when I said you had to completely rest it. You were like, can I still swim? Can I run? I was like, no.
Yeah.
No, Brad. And the panic in your eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'd rather that it had killed me. What do you think happens when you die?
So I think your consciousness goes. I think you don't know. You're not. Your mind, your consciousness is gone. As in, you don't. I don't believe in an afterlife. I don't believe that you go somewhere and you're still you, but you're like, oh, here I am in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that your energy, because energy, you can't destroy energy. It has to go somewhere. That's just physics. You know, energy just doesn't ever end. It just changes form. I believe. I mean, I remember.
That's true. Yes. So where's your energy going?
Yeah, I think that your energy remains in the world and you could. Yeah, it could transform into. But I don't think you're conscious of it. But I just think it transforms into whatever, like a tree or. So I guess I would believe in reincarnation, but without your consciousness. Because I think that you would be hopefully reborn as something natural, like a tree that would, you know, a tree might grow or some grass might grow and then an animal might eat that thing. And then, you know, you're part of you or the energy that was you is now part of something else. That's what I believe.
But you don't sort of know it's happening. You're gone.
No, I think that when you die, it's like you're going under general anaesthetic, but you just never wake up. Bad news?
No, not necessarily, especially if you want to switch off, you know. It's hard to imagine, isn't it?
Obviously, I'd much prefer for there to be an afterlife, although actually, maybe I wouldn't, because I don't think I'm a very good person.
Hey, whoa, wow, what don't I know about you?
I'm just quite impatient and...
I don't think that
accounts. I don't do as much kind of charity stuff as I should. I love a bitch.
Mm.
But then also, do you know what I think? I think I'm a realistic person. All those people who are like so nice and positive, I'm like, what are you hiding? You know?
Interesting.
Doesn't everyone have like... Because aren't we selfish by nature?
Yes, yeah, so there's a whole argument of altruism doesn't exist because being good to people makes you feel good. So there's always an element of selfishness in it.
I'm quite true to myself, I would say. I don't pretend to be something I'm not. And so I guess you could say, well, that's honest. You're honest then. You don't really lie a lot. But then maybe your actions could be nicer. You could choose not to, you know, submit to your...
dark impulses.
More selfish and, kind of negative impulses. But I don't know. I don't know.
The fact that you even think about these things sort of suggests you're a good person, annoyingly.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh. Because I think you wouldn't care. You'd be more like, oh, I'm fucking selfish. Go fuck yourself. That's me. Anyone, you know, people, you know, one of my worst things people say, well, that's me, isn't it? Like, as if you know yourself. I don't know myself. Yeah. What are we talking about? People in reality TV always go, that's me. That's me. That's what I'm like. How do you know? No. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I've got no idea what I'm like. I just, it's really hard. It's like you're constantly assimilating how you see yourself and how you think other people see you and then how they actually respond to you and you're imagining what people think of you. As I said, my head's a very busy place. So
yeah, it's exhausting in there, but I love
when death does come, I think I'll I think in the moment I'll probably just be like, you know?
Yeah, and then get eaten by a squirrel.
Well,
good news, there is a heaven, and
oh, great.
I'm at the door, and you passed, you're in. And at the door I say, stop bitching about people in here, please.
You'd let me in because you'd want me to do the catering.
Yeah, I'd want you to make your sausages. Rose Johnson, not only is very talented at Skepco, commercial acting, acting and writing, and wins awards for kids' TV, but makes some of the finest sausages in town.
I mean, all credit there really does have to go to Nigella because it is her recipe, but I make them every year at my Christmas party. Brad normally comes, eats about 30 of them, and then looks 50.
Yeah,
you and Jack Rook just decimate. Every year I have to up the order every year. Yeah, but
and then I look a bit guilty, like, other people had
you
some,
look
right?
You look really guilty. You look like disgusted with yourself, and you look... like, guilty, like you've eaten them all and no one else has had any. I've started doing a ham as well, just to try and take some of the
pressure,
some of the heavy lifting meat-wise.
Yeah. I sort of now take it that the ham is for everyone else and the sausages are for me, right?
That's basically it.
Yeah, okay, cool. Anyway, you're allowed in heaven. Welcome to heaven. It's filled with your favourite things. What's your favourite thing?
Food.
It's fucking food everywhere. The chairs are made of food. It's food up the walls. Everywhere you turn, there's food. The food is Nigella. Nigella's there cooking all the food if you like.
Oh, yeah.
She's
there.
She's there cooking away.
And she's my friend.
She likes you. You're very close. You keep trying to bitch with her. She always goes, shh, Brad's listening. No bitching in heaven. And you're like, oh, yeah, God, it's dreary, isn't it? And then
And then I go and bitch about Nigella to someone being like, gosh, she's a bit boring, isn't she?
She won't even bitch with me. And I go, I'm listening, Rose, I'm always listening.
To be honest, this sounds quite stressful.
It's a little bit stressful, yeah. You have to be the better person. Now, people in heaven, they're obsessed with you, Rose. They're obsessed with you. They want to know all about you, but they want to know about your life through film. The first thing they ask is, what's the first film you remember seeing, Rose Johnson?
Well, so this, okay... I would caveat this by saying that I did not have a TV in my house until I was 9.
What?
My parents did not.
Did you live in the woods?
Pretty much. But no, I lived in a little village in Stockland, but my parents just did not think it was, they just didn't have one. I think they were being very moral and we would read and run around in the woods, basically.
I love that.
So they used to hire one at Christmas so we could watch the Christmas stuff. But the first film I can remember seeing is at the cinema then, not at home, because we didn't have a TV, so I didn't really watch things. By the way, I've got three little brothers, and by the time it got to the last two, morals out the window in front of the TV all the time. When I went to school, I used to get like homemade, like wholemeal bread sandwiches with cottage cheese in them, like really grim. And then by the time Marcus got that, my little brother, it was like, have a cheese string and a pepperami, off you go. Like, the morals went. So the first film I remember seeing in the cinema is Beethoven's Second.
Oh, I love Beethoven's Second. Charles Grodin, rest in peace.
Yeah, my memory's quite hazy, but I remember, what I can remember of it is dogs having an affair.
Beethoven's got a lady dog pregnant, and now
secret.
There's lots of little dogs.
Yeah, but I think I remember that watching this thing where a dog's like sneaking off to see the lady. Is that right?
I don't think it's a mistress, though. He's not cheating on another dog. It's just
when I say affair, I mean just like a love affair, as in he's not supposed to be seeing this lady. I just loved the idea.
Yeah.
I found it so funny of this dog, this like bad boy dog being like sneaking out to see his woman. And then the other thing I can remember so vividly is the scene where, in my memory, this is what happens. The dog pulls down a house. He pulls the house down. Something's going on in the house that's bad. I think like the daughter's having a party and it's all gone a bit west. And the dog saves the day. The dog is like tied to the, it's one of those like American lake houses made of wood.
Yeah.
And the dog's like tied to a post. And the dog pulls the entire house down. And me being like 9 years old, just being like, wow.
That dog has affairs, can destroy houses. I mean, Beethoven is an impressive beast of a dog. Can you explain what it's like to go to the cinema not knowing what a TV is? Like, is it the first time you're seeing moving images? Are you like, what the fuck is this?
I'm getting out like a crucifix and being like, witchery. No, we had hired a TV at Christmas, so I'd seen things like, I think I remember watching The Snowman. I remember watching that really vividly. I think I just remember it basically being the most exciting and glamorous trip out you could. I went with my best friend Sophie, who grew up just up the lane from me in my little village in Devon, and it was for her birthday, and her mum, who's called Loops, brought us, a group of us, popped us in the Mondeo, drove us, and obviously, like, at the time you go, I was so excited to go to this, like, mecca that was, it's essentially an industrial estate, you know, it's like one of those, on the outskirts of a town where you've got, like, your Hollywood Bowl, your Frankie and Benny's, you've got your multiplex. But go, like, to me, coming from this tiny, like, village in Devon with no TV and seeing that, it was like, and I now when I drive past it, it's like the most depressing place on the history of Earth, you know. But when we were going anywhere there, Hollywood Bowl or the cinema, and then, and I remember, like, sometimes we would go to McDonald's after, which again, for me, food's a big thing. That was huge because my parents did not allow me to have, as you can imagine, to have McDonald's.
Wow.
And, but I remember also, sometimes we'd have, but I feel like on this occasion, Loops did a picnic in the back of the Mondeo. Like in America where they do the tailgate stuff, like when they have their NFL games and then
tailgate
people will go and have... Yeah, it was like that, but in the car park of a Hollywood Bowl on the outskirts of Taunton in the back of a Ford Mondeo, and no one else is doing it, and we're having like Marmite sandwiches. Little Rose was like, I've made it. This
the
is
best
incredible.
Day of your life. Mm-hmm. Having grown up without a TV and all of that, would you recommend, if you have children, do you want to do the same? Or will you have screens everywhere?
No, I think screens are unavoidable, so don't make them weird by not giving it to them. You know what I mean? You don't want to be that kid at school. Whereas when I was growing up, you know, there were probably other people who didn't have a TV. There were only four channels. It wasn't like screens were on all the time. You didn't have a phone. I think you submit. But do you know what I'd also say is, it depends where you're growing up as well. I grew up in Devon, where we had a garden. Nature. Yeah, that's TV. You know, you're like,
nature's
you're running
its own
around.
TV.
Exactly. I was about to say nature is nature's television. Right. It doesn't make sense. But I would run around with Sophie, you know, her parents had, you know, we would just be outside making mischief. Whereas like I live in a small two bed flat in London. I can't imagine what people do. How would you? Yeah, you've got to give them a telly.
Like the telly on. What's the film that scared you the most? How do you feel about being scared?
I hate it. hate it with a passion to the point at which I genuinely for a long time had a proper phobia of scary films. The idea to me of like Nightmare on Elm Street or the Halloween films, the thought of them, if I even caught a glimpse or saw the opening credits or heard the music, I would be in a cold. I hate the sensation of being scared. I think because I'm a very stressed, control freaky, living on my nerves person, I got enough cortisol flowing through my veins all the time. I don't need any more. I feel like if I watch a scary film, it's going to tip me into the danger zone.
Right.
I don't want it. I hate the feeling of it. I don't understand why people enjoy that feeling. I genuinely don't. I don't enjoy it. So I don't watch them. I didn't watch Scream until I was late 20s, and I did not like it. But the scariest film that I've watched is Paranormal Activity, and it was from watching it on Gogglebox. I haven't even watched it.
It's a fucking scary film. I think it's brilliant. Brilliant.
I was watching Gogglebox innocently of a Friday night. Yeah. I love Gogglebox with Dan. Yeah. I was just trying to relax, have my nice, probably a little martini on a Friday. Mm-hmm. And that came on. It was viscerally horrifying. I genuinely was like, I want to leave the room. I hate this. And it was just clips of it. And it was like watching it, you know, watching other people watch it. And I genuinely had to put my fingers in my ears and cover my eyes and say to Dan, can you tell me when this is finished? The clips were them going to bed. It was in the bedroom and then noises and then pulled out of the bed by a leg and pulled up. And I, for me, horrifying, horrifying. It just makes me shiver and I don't enjoy that. Like, what is it about scary films that's nice?
It's psychologically good for you. Lets you experience it basically allows you to experiment and play with your actual fears of death, but in a safe space in the same way that a roller coaster does. And in the adrenaline spike that you get watching it, it entirely makes you present in the world, and when it's over, it's almost cathartic, like, oh, like you've done a workout and you go, fucking hell.
Do you think that it says about me that I hate it so much? Do you think I secretly am like super scared of death then?
What I find interesting is you wrote a book that is that you've described having to write scenes where like someone
crime
has their heart in their
novel.
Mouth. Sounds scary, your book.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about it. And actually that's so mad because I do read loads of thrillers. It's just watching it unfold. And I feel like when you're reading a book, you're never scared. You're in control of it. But in a film, you don't know. It's something about the visuals and the audio and the realism of it.
Yeah.
In a book, you're removed. It's words on a page. A film you are watching, it's a realistic depiction of something terrifying happening. I don't think I'll ever watch. I would never watch I'd never watch a horror film or a scary film out of choice ever.
But you do love a true crime, don't you? You love a true crime doc.
Love it.
That's what I can't get my head around. Now, a lot of people don't like horror films, but will watch a show about a woman who's been hacked.
Well, also,
or
for example, like I'd say, one of the best films that I've seen would be like West of Memphis and those Paradise Lost films.
Yeah.
It's weird. But I think because they're not suspenseful. I think it's the suspense. Right. They are telling you something. They're telling us. They're still their stories. I mean, they're real, but they're telling you a story that has happened, that there's no jeopardy. It's happened.
It's the past tense of it. Interesting. Very interesting, Rosanna.
I bet a psychologist would have a field day with that.
Hmm. Well, I know a lot of people don't like horror films. And I watched one the other day. I really love them. And I was thinking, what is it that I love? And part of it is, like, when you get, like, a full fucking shiver, like, fucking out. And you think, why would you be putting yourself through it? But it's almost like... It's like something's happening. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's really exciting.
And
it's
do you know, the funny thing is like, I really love that feeling. I'm very emotive and I feel things really deeply. Mm. I love that feeling of something's happening in almost all other contexts. I love feeling a swell of emotion. I love feeling a swell of releasing a big, having a big cry in a film or...
Yeah.
Finding something really funny. It's just that particular one. Maybe it is because I feel things very, I'm very sensitive, so I feel things really deeply. Maybe it's just too much. It's like, it's just too much. I don't know.
What's the film, speaking of feeling things deeply, what's the film that made you cry the most?
Titanic. So Titanic, I mm-hmm. think, just came at a time when I was a very hormonal, very impressionable, very like, Dawson's Creek era teenager, and I watched it and I vividly remember, I don't even think I watched it at the cinema, I think I watched it at a sleepover. I remember Luke's watching it at my friend's house. No, it wasn't at Luke's house, it was my friend Sarah Keown's house,
right?
And I watched it there with a group of girls and I was absolutely like beside myself, just sobbing and sobbing. And I genuinely remember when it finished thinking to myself, your life will never be the same again.
That's really lovely.
You have watched this thing and you are a different person now because you have watched this epic love and this epic tragedy and nothing will be the same. I think it was like probably the first film that I watched where it was like, oh, there's a really unhappy end, like a really horrendous thing happens. And I think probably I was probably in love with a boy, you know, as you're in deep teenage infatuation with a boy at school and you just project all of your unrequited love and those feelings onto that film and you go that perfectly absolutely mad, but you go, my teenage brain going, that perfectly encapsulates my feelings. That's real. When it's like, no, that's people drowning in icy water. Your crush is just moving to schools. Like, yeah, that's not the same. But it really punched me in the gut. Maybe it is a particularly female. I don't know if it like that. There's something about it that, because you're a woman, you empathise with Rose, especially me, because my name is Rose.
Oh my God, you that was you. Yeah, listen, it's a great film. It lost me very early on. I remember it lost me very early on when Billy Zane says, that Picasso, he won't amount to much. And I thought, oh, fuck.
Yeah, yeah. But Kathy Bates, she's putting in a shift.
She's putting it. Listen, everyone's doing the Lord's work there.
Also, do you know an actor called Jonathan Hyde? Or is it Jonathan Hind? Jonathan Hyde. He's in Jumanji. He's the hunter in Jumanji. And he's in Titanic. As like, he's got a big moustache.
Yes.
He also lived just outside my village at the time. So, I mean, you can imagine my delight. I would just like, hope that I was going to... I mean, I think also, I would also say a massive part of this is like a deep and like, truly unhealthy crush on Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I'm thinking maybe I'll bump into Jonathan Hind, or is it Hyde? I can't remember. Sorry to Jonathan, whichever one it is. I remember thinking I'll bump into him, then somehow through him I'll meet Leonardo DiCaprio and then we'll fall in love and be together.
It's a lovely, I think this is truthful.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's the film that you love? It's not critically acclaimed. Most people don't like it, but you love it unconditionally.
Home Alone 2.
Lost in New York.
Yeah. Mm. I'll tell you why.
The Donald Trump one.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. That is unfortunate, the Donald Trump cameo. So when we would hire the TV at Christmas, we would often watch Home Alone. And we still, my family and I, watch it every year together. Like whenever, when we're all together for Christmas, we still watch it. And we watch Home Alone 2. And I love Home Alone 2 because I think it's a really funny, genuinely funny sequel that does play on the jokes from the first one and does in a playful way and not in a cringe way. In a way that does sort of, it's self-referential. There are really funny things. I mean, yeah, just them, just when they sleep in and they just get up and they just go, we did it again. I love it. Well, I mean, what's not to love? I also think Uncle Frank in the Home Alone movies is one of the greatest comic creations of cinema. And I'm not saying that with any degree of sarcasm or irony. I think he's so funny. I think it, just everything he says, like when Kevin says something like, When his mum says, you've got to go and get your tie, where's your tie? And he's like, well, it's in the bathroom, but Uncle Frank's in there having a shower. And he said, if I came in and saw him, I'd grow up never feeling like a real man. Like, that's so funny. And just, yeah, just he's just so funny. Trying to steal the glasses from the... He's just like an absolute nightmare. Handing around the canapes before it's time. Lovely. And Yeah, I think for Uncle Frank I love, so anything where I got to see him again, great. Mm-hmm. And then also I really like the way that in Home Alone 2 Lost in New York, the psychopathic elements of Kevin McAllister's character are really, they ramp it up. They go, we've got to, I mean, literally in that there's a scene where Marv has, he's somehow got Marv, giving Marv an electric shock, and he turns, there's this like where he's like dead-eyed Kevin and he's just turning the knob of the generator up. And then I don't know if you remember this, there's a shot in which Marv's face, when he turns the shock right up, cuts to a skeleton with hair briefly.
Yes,
he
it's
and
really,
the noise he
really
makes
distressing.
I'm going to do the noise now.
Okay.
He goes, and it's so good. It also has my favourite quote from, I mean, I quote, me and my brothers quote this to each other all the time. I do also think that like Joe Pesci and is it Howard Stern?
Daniel Stern,
sorry. I think those performances are absolutely outstanding. I just think Home Alone, the Home Alone films don't get enough credit. And I think Home Alone 2 is just as good. I do, if not better. I think it's on a par. But obviously Home Alone 1, people think it's good. And everyone's like, oh, Home Alone 2 shit. It's not, it's brilliant. Also, Catherine O'Hara. I mean, it's an incredible cast. It's amazing. But the finest quote, and me and my brothers quote this all the time, is when Marv gets in. He finally gets in. He's had numerous bricks to the head. Yep. You know, there's always a bricks to the head scene. Mm-hmm. And then Marv goes, he finally breaks into this abandoned house and he goes, Harry, I've reached the top. And then immediately falls down two stories, steps in a big hole, falls down two stories flat on his face. Then there's like, it cuts away to something else and it just cuts back to him. And he just goes, he lifts his head up and just goes, wow, what a hole. And it's absolutely fantastic. Get yourself on YouTube.
Get
find
yourself
that clip.
To Home Alone 2.
Yeah. Wow, what it's a cracking. Hole.
Great answer. Rose Johnson, what is the film that you used to love, but you've watched it recently and you've thought, I do not like this anymore, for whatever that may be?
Another Christmas film. It's Love Actually.
Interesting.
Used to love it. Really loved it. You know, nice, cosy Richard Curtis film. Ha 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 ha. Lovely. Romantic. Yeah, just really thought it was lovely. Thought it was sad, maybe cry, you know, Emma Thompson. Thought it was really funny. Hugh Grant as a dance, all that. Yeah. And then the bit with, you know, they're porn actors and then they, you know. Yeah, and then you give it a rewatch recently and you think, oh, dearie me. Dear, oh, dear. Dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Colin Firth is basically given a woman when he goes away who they can't communicate.
Can't speak.
But she nonetheless falls in love with him. And then there's a scene towards the end where the dad is trying to sell off the other daughter, saying no one's going to want Miss Dunkin' Donuts 2015 or whatever it is. A lot of fat shaming, like Marty McCutcheon's character. The whole comic storyline there is that she's fat when she's not fat. There's a Lindy West article on Jezebel, which says all of this much better than I am. But it's an incredibly problematic film, and you kind of go, when you get older and you sort of, well, you sort of understand how, I think I went to university and did some film studies actually, and sort of thought about how women are presented in films, and yeah, I just was like, this is appalling. And you just think, well, this is, yeah, it's very obviously a film that's written by a man for women, and I just think it doesn't treat us very well. You know?
I do know. I know exactly what you're talking about, Rose, and I can't argue with any of that.
That being said, if it was on, I would watch it.
That being said, it's really lovely and it'll make you cry.
Yeah, it is. That's the thing. The problem is like, it does with these, there's a weird thing with being a woman with films like that, where they are so good in this formulaic way at not manipulating your emotions, but provoking a certain emotional response via narrative, via music, via all that kind of stuff, that you sort of do enjoy them. You suspend your disbelief. You suspend your outrage to enjoy them. It's just, I wish that I didn't have to do that with so many films.
I agree with that. What's the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but because the experience you had around seeing it, that will always make it special, Rose.
So I found this one really hard. Partially because I have a terrible memory. So, what I would love to say is I went to Australia on my gap year because I'm an absolute basic bitch. And I went to this town in the mountains in Australia where basically weed is legal. I don't know how. I think maybe it's just like the police are like, we can't be bothered to go all the way over there. Let's just let them get on with it. So it's like a really like hippy dippy town. You know, everywhere sells bongs. There's a lot of white people with dreadlocks. It's that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And they've got a cinema there where everyone goes and gets high and watches a film. And I really remember, and that experience was crazy because I was super high. But the problem is I was so high, I can't remember what the film was.
That's great. Do you remember any detail of it?
No, I remember the cinema. I remember the cinema more. It had like psychedelic stuff painted on the walls, but the film, I can't tell you.
That's great.
And then, you know, you sort of said maybe the film that you went to see on your on a date, a special date. Well, the film that I went to see on my first date with my husband was We Need to Talk About Kevin. So
incredible. And that is such a good film for you too.
yeah, it doesn't really work. Like, I'd say that wasn't a particularly memorable experience. It's not special to me, that film. I'm not like, oh yeah, that lovely film that we watched together on our first date, I'd rather forget it. Do you know what I mean? But
Did you kiss after we need to talk about Kevin?
Probably. I shouldn't have imagined I'd have let that stop me.
No, probably got you in the mood, if anything. That makes sense.
So the film that I'm actually going to pick for this one is Kill Bill 2.
Okay.
Because I really, when I was thinking, when do I really remember being in a cinema that's a really memorable experience? And it was for that. And I was at uni and I remember I loved the first Kill Bill film so much. So I was so excited when the second one was going to come out. And I went to watch it at lunchtime, you know, the first showing of the day. And I remember there was no one else in the cinema, just me. And I remember really vividly feeling like this is what it's like being a grown up.
Oh,
I'm an
nice.
Adult. I can go and watch this film that's an 18, that's by a cool director. And I'm watching it in the middle of the day by myself. And I can do that. Yeah, and it's a bit of a weird one, but that's...
No,
that's...
I love that. I really love that.
Hmm.
That's a great answer, and we've not had one like that, and I love it. Rose Johnson, what's the film you most relate to?
Lady Bird, because of her relationship with her mum.
Tell me.
Yeah, just that specific detail of it. I just thought that it presented that impossible relationship between mother and daughter just perfectly. And the fact that it is absolutely 50% pure love and 50% just the most annoyance and irritation and passive aggression that anyone can ever have.
What's your ratio now?
With my mum?
Yeah, that 50-50, what is it now? Is it still 50-50?
It depends if I'm in her actual company.
Right. Okay, in her actual company.
I'm with her, she is the most amazing, loving, supportive, generous person. And she's an incredible mother. But it must be a genetic thing. She just can inspire the most, just absolute impossible, feelings of annoyance with me. My interactions with her are when I am the worst version of myself, but also the best version of myself.
That's so
sometimes, yeah, she makes me want to be the best version of myself, and then she makes me want to scream.
I think that's nice. I think my family only get the worst of me, sadly. I don't think they get the
best
horrible.
Of me. It's a horrible thing to notice about yourself, that you're being like that and that you're sort of incapable of not being like that. You revert to this, sulky teenager, basically, who has no patience. Yeah. Dan says that he thinks that we are genetically predisposed to find our parents annoying because that's what makes us leave and not stay with them forever.
Yeah, I have heard a theory that why teenagers suddenly hate their parents is so that they won't have sex with them. Because when we were living in caves and there are only four people on the planet.
Yeah, you were horny.
Once you're starting
getting
puberty, you're thinking, oh, she's fit. Oh.
So I'd say for me, no, but sure. In the past, fine. But yeah, that one. And I don't want it to sound like, does that make me sound bad? I love my mum so much. It's not about her. It's not about her at all. No. It's about me and how, it's such a complicated relationship because I think a lot of time your mothers will project things onto their daughters that they, their own hopes and aspirations and neuroses. And then as a daughter, you react against that, but you don't appreciate the different obstacles and things like that, that your parents, you don't see them as people. They're your parents. They're just an authority. But actually, it's like, no, they're just a person, you know.
Yeah.
And I just thought that film really nailed it.
That's a lovely answer, Rose. What's, speaking of mums, What's the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Okay, you've said I'm not allowed to mention this, but I'm sorry, it's Dirty Dancing. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Yeah, I only say because it's come up a lot, but it hasn't come up for a while, so it's okay.
So I would say that for me, Dirty Dancing is maybe the most seminal film of my life. So I was like, I have to mention it.
Fair enough. It's a fantastic film.
I watched it first with my friends, the Barnsies, Polly Daisy and Georgia.
Yeah.
Barnsies! Absolute legends. I was far too young. We were, must have been, yeah, under 10, I would say. When did it come out? 80s, 90s.
88, 86?
Yeah, so yeah, I think we would have been under 10. It was so weird because I watched it. We used to watch it all the time and loved it because obviously at that age you love all the dancing and the music. It's like the soundtrack is absolutely banging.
Yeah.
Obviously the abortion storyline really went over my head at that age. But I didn't watch it for years. So when I did then watch it again when I was an adult or when I was a sort of teenager, not only is it like an absolutely fantastic film that I will stand by until the day I die, but it hit me with the most overwhelming nostalgia that I've ever experienced, because I remember it's like this, the most crazy deja vu when you watched, you're like, I watched this as a child and I can't and I'm only just remembering that now, and I can remember these sights and noises and stuff. But the scene in when she goes to his cabin and he dances with her, and he specifically, the bit where he like holds her and he sort of swings her round, and I believe These Arms of Mine is playing.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
And Mamma Mia. I watched that, I think, yeah, at an age where... I think it was probably the first sort of sex scene. I mean, it's a very softcore sex scene. You don't see anything. I think it was probably the first sex scene I ever watched. And it was like, what is this? And Swayze is like so hot.
Yeah.
And just also that like whole, it's got a real teenage romance vibe to it, where, you know, where they like, he's like, they sneak off and go down to the lake and he breaks the thing with his car. Like, I feel like I had... You know, when you're a teenager, you do things like that, don't you? You feel like everything's this epic. You feel like everything's a kind of holiday, a summer romance.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but that scene where he sort of like dips her round. Oof.
Let me tell you, I watched it. I've seen it a million times because I have a sister, but I hadn't seen it in many years. But I did watch it about 3 months ago when it was on TV. It was on. I thought, fuck, I haven't seen this in years. Does it hold up? Not only does it hold up, it's fucking amazing. It's a really, really brilliant film. Very far ahead of its time. It's brilliant. However, the only bit that I was like, is right at the end when Johnny comes on stage to do the last dance, even though he's been asked not to. He gives a speech and he goes,
yeah,
I'm supposed to do the last dance and we do this every year. And he goes, but someone taught me that it's important to start. And I'm thinking, everyone in the audience is going, what the fuck is he talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
No,
they've
idea
all come to their end
is...
of year show. They've had their four pina coladas deep. They're like, what's this coming on?
A, who
about?
Is this? And B, what the fuck is he talking about? And why does he look like he's going to cry? What on earth is going on?
But when you watch that as an impressionable sort of late teenager, the thought of a boy doing that about you, it's hot. I just think it's an absolutely outstanding film. I really do.
Yeah.
I think really the soundtrack good. Is, yeah, I just, like I said, I think the soundtrack's incredible. Jennifer Grey is brilliant.
Mm.
And like, you know, peak of her, I'd say, you know, she peaked.
Yeah. There's a subcategory, troubling boners, worrying why-dones. What's the film you found arousing, but you weren't sure that you should have?
Okay, so the film that I've chosen, I don't think it's that weird to find... I think it's not unusual to find this character sexy.
Mm-hmm.
But... So it's Streetcar Named Desire. It's Marlon Brando.
Classy.
And that... yeah, he's just raw sex, yeah. But he's also an abusive husband. So that's the reason why it's worrying, because it's like, why do you find that attractive? But I do think that's like, yeah, the bit where he like meows at like a cat. Oof, don't mind if I do.
What is the objectively the greatest film of all time, Rose Johnson?
Silence of the Lambs.
Fantastic answer.
I'll tell you for why.
Please do. I don't disagree.
The thing is, with this one, the objectively thing is a real tricky word in that, because objectively, obviously, it's like Godfather Part 2, or you know what I mean? But like, yes, 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 great film. However, I think for me, for pure entertainment value, Silence of the Lambs is a perfect film.
It's also classified as a horror, Rose Johnson.
Do you think? See, I think it's a thriller. I think there's a difference.
I mean, there's people peeling off faces.
Oh,
there's, you know, there's lots of suspense. There's like, is she going to be in the dark in the house?
Yeah, but I would say you don't see the violence.
She's looking for Buffalo Bill in the fucking house with a fucking night vision. That's not a horror. You love a horror. I can't believe it. You're obsessed. Yeah.
Maybe it's just that I never watched them, and then I did watch that one and I loved it, so maybe I would love them.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, I think that film is just so well made and so, like, I mean, it's widely considered an excellent film, isn't it? I mean, I don't need to justify that, but in terms of if you want to sit down and watch a film, a movie, Silence of the Lambs.
It's a fucking
You're never going to go, oh, nah. You're going to be like, yes. And also, for me, it had to be that, because my favourite thing, like my favourite genre of movies is like 80s/90s thrillers. Like, it's got Michael Douglas, please.
Yeah.
You know.
He's got in
like a really boxy Porsche. He works, you know, he's got to have like an impossibly like 80s-y.
Glass everywhere.
What's that film? I was trying to remember this.
Basic Instinct?
Where he's in his house and then someone comes and there's this like really tense standoff.
Fatal Attraction?
Maybe it's Fatal Attraction, but I think it's another man though.
Hmm.
I can't remember. This is a bad anecdote. But basically, my favourite, if you say to me, like, what kind of film do you want to watch? I would be like Wall Street, The Firm.
Right.
There's got to be like probably a psychopathic woman. It can be Glenn Close. It can be
Rebecca De Mornay.
Yeah, it can be like something like that. Just something that's really like, probably it's got to be American, really escapist. Like all about really rich people in the 80s, like
Pacific Heights
or 90s. Yeah. I love those films.
Yeah.
I love them. Like love The Bone Collector, like things like this. Love.
Yeah.
That's if you say like, I'm constantly looking for more of those. Working Girl. I constantly, that's what I want is like, it's got a, sort of a Nora Ephron, like, you know, When Harry Met Sally, sort of, it's like that aesthetic of like that era.
Well, then the modern equivalent of that, you're looking at your Nancy Myers films, you're looking at the It's Complicated, and you're looking at Something's Gotta Give.
No, I don't want those. It has to be dated. 80s or 90s, I would say. For me, that's the golden age of cinema.
Right.
Because, you know, again, greatest film of all time, I thought, will I pick a big musical? Like, I love Oliver, Cabaret. But I just, the most enjoyment I get is out of those really escapist 80s, like, luxe. Somebody is either murderous or so doing something so nefarious with money that it's going to drive them to murder.
Absolutely obsessed with horror films. What's the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
It's Die Hard.
Great answer. Lovely.
Yeah, film. Just pure and simple. Love it.
There you
it.
Go. Glass, 80s, horror.
Yeah, that absolutely fits into my thing. Yeah, I think it's fantastic. Again, I love the, what's his name? The guy.
They come up for the weekend. We have a few laughs. That guy.
Yeah, it's Rolex. You know that guy, and he gets shot in the head really early doors. Yeah, he's great. Such a good film. But I mean, I don't really need to go into it, do I? But again, it's like we watch that every Christmas. It's a real kind of, and a lot of those films, it is just like the kind of quotability thing, isn't it? That you, it's just iconic, and Rickman just doing an absolutely sterling job.
It's really, really, really good storytelling, Die Hard, and it's the sort of film that looks really is. Easy, and it has never been topped, really.
Okay, this is a fun story about my mum.
Yeah.
We were watching, my mum and dad get really annoyed whenever we're watching Home Alone, Home Alone 2 and Die Hard every Christmas. They come and they're like, oh, this again. You've seen it. And we're like, yes, that's not the point. So then one year we were like, let's watch Die Hard 2. She hasn't seen that. Right. About an hour into the film.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis walks into shot and my mum goes, who's he? So just to give you an idea of what I'm playing with mum-wise.
Right.
You're watching a film. Dan, my husband said that one of his ultimate aims is to watch Inception with her and put a webcam on her. And just so we can like live broadcast her watching Inception and losing her mind.
Oh dear. What is the, we don't like to be negative, Rose, so do it quickly. What's the worst film you ever saw?
Oh, I'm going to be negative. It's called Love's Kitchen and it's an absolute stinker.
Is that the Gordon Ramsay one? Gordon Ramsay's
in it. Yes, Gordon Ramsay's in it doing a cameo and, I mean, as himself and failing to convince, I would say.
Which surprises me because I always thought he is sort of acting in his shows.
That's the thing. But I think as soon as someone says, oh, but you're acting in a film. Yeah, it's. But I also think it's the fault of the script. It's one of the worst scripts that there's ever been. I can't really remember much of it. I watched it ages ago and just could not believe my eyes. Basically, the premise is like the entire Jeopardy that the whole film is based on is if a restaurant can get a good review. That's the whole thing.
That's stakes.
And there's like the peak of the action in the film is when this main guy tries to win round the hostile locals with a duck dish. And I'm saying, like, if you're comparing that to Die Hard, say, Jeopardy wise, not great.
I've not seen Love's Kitchen, but I'm going to defend that story. There's a way of telling that story that I think can be interesting, and I'm sure that films like Big Night and Ratatouille aren't far off the plot of Love's Kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
I think it may be a bad film, but I wouldn't blame it on the premise.
It's a writer-director, I think, bless him, and he's had a go. I'd say this is one of the instances in which you should pick one and then hand over control to someone else and get another eye over it. Do you know what I mean?
In that case, have something jump off a skyscraper.
Yeah. And I also think like when I watch it, I suppose actually though, it's quite amazing that it got made because you just kind of think who paid, where was the money for that? And then, but then you watch it and I kind of think, well, do you know what? That got made.
That's it.
I've written better stuff than that. Yeah. For me, I just remember it feeling like it's like chaos, but it's like really boring chaos. So like nothing hangs together. There's no real like narrative. There's characters that sort of come in and you think, oh, they're going to be something, surely they're going to then be something integral to the plot, never see him again. Then Simon Callow comes in, the performances are all over the place, there's no you know, sort of overarching thing, but it's chaotic in it's really baggy and chaotic, but just like so boring. Like it's not even like, you know, what's that movie The Room that everyone loves watching because it's so bad. Like it's just, although actually, to be honest, I would watch it with you. I think it would be funny to watch because it's so bad. So actually, maybe it's not a terrible film because it's entertaining, but not in the way that it's intending to be. Because I don't think it's even really a comedy, or maybe it is meant to be a comedy and it's not. It's so unfunny that then it's funny.
Does Gordon Ramsay come in and do a kitchen nightmare or something? What's his part in it?
Yeah, I think he's like a friend of the chef character. And yeah, I think it's, yeah, him right. sort of being like
you
that kind of ilk.
This is shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Your restaurant is rubbish. I'm angry.
But I feel like if enough people watched it, it could become like The Room. Like, I feel like there could right. be like, you know, screenings at the Prince Charles Cinema where everyone goes and watches it and shouts the lines along. So I'd say if you haven't watched it, have a go, because it's remarkable.
I think you've actually sold it quite well.
Imagine if it now becomes a sleeper hit. Sorry, go on.
Because of you. I'd buy some shares in it right now. What's you're in comedy. You're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
Okay. The one that I remember laughing to the most is a film called The Castle.
Love The Castle. The fucking great film.
I watched it when I was on my basic gap year in Australia, and they put it on a really long coach journey. You know, you do your backpacker thing, you get on a Greyhound bus. They put this film on, and I just remember being like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. And then I couldn't, because there wasn't online, you couldn't watch films online then. I got home and I couldn't get it because it was a different region. Could never get it. And I don't think I haven't watched it since. I just remember. I actually just watched a clip of it to be like, do I remember that this is really funny? My God, it's funny. Script is so funny.
Yeah.
Like the opening scene where the guy's saying where they live and he's like, we live right next to an airport, which is going to be really handy if we ever need to use a plane. And it's just like stuff like the art. My dad got our house for an absolute steal. Like, it's worth now almost as much as what he paid for it. Like, it's so funny. And it's just a really, I think it was like such a low, it was a really low budget film.
Low budget, massive hit in Australia.
Yeah, I think they've like voted it their favourite film. Yeah. But it's not really widely known over here, is it?
It's a great
or
film.
Is it?
Not massively.
But it's so funny. And I'd say, you know, if you like Christopher Guest kind of films, it's that kind of very, like, supernaturalistic, but really funny. They're real people, it's characters, but the script is just fantastic. I don't know if it was much of it was improvised or...
Were you mashed off your head when you watched it, like, the rest of your time in Australia?
No, I don't think I was. I was probably hungover.
Right. Were you on your own in Australia?
Yeah. Oh,
that's cool. Did you fall in love?
Oh, I tried to, but I didn't have much success dating wise until quite late on, Brad. I was too loud and that, no, I tried my best, but no, I didn't fall in love. I really did feel for a long time that there was something fundamentally wrong with me. I just didn't have much success with men. And I do think it was because I was probably very outgoing and loud and intimidating. And and because actually, yeah, since I have, there's been like a couple of people who've said, oh yeah, I used to like you at school, but I was like, you could have fucking told me. I was just in my bedroom crying, pretending that Leonardo DiCaprio was my boyfriend.
Yeah. Rose Johnson, you are nothing but fascinating. You've been a wonderful guest. However, when you went to, you know, they've opened Latitude this summer and it's a test event that's going to be massive. Everyone, full capacity. And you go along, you're doing a solo show and a Sketco show and a reading of your new book. And between your first gig, you do your first gig, absolutely smash it. You're the hero of Latitude. And you're nervous about your second gig. It's Sketco, back with the birthday girls. And you go to a Portaloo to have a little number two, and you go in there and you drop your earring that you were wearing, this special earring to you that Dan gave you, and it's falling straight down the port, and you're like, oh, fuck. But it's one of them Portaloos, like it's a trough, you know, underneath with all the effluence of what's going on in there. And you're like, oh, fucking hell, that bit, like, Dan's going to kill me if I don't get that earring back. And so you sort of reach your hand in. You can't reach. You think, well, there's enough toilet paper here. I can sort of clean my arms. You put your other arm in. And then your arm slides a bit and you fall head first down the
pool. This is horrifying.
Yeah, but you get stuck because you get... So your top half goes down.
Wedged.
you're wedged in, but your head has gone straight into the shit. So your head, you can't, and you can't move because your arms are trapped in the shape of the box. You're like that, but your head first in this sewage, and your head is in it, and you can't breathe, and your legs are kicking. You're kicking against the door. It's quite a dark death, and people can hear banging.
Yeah, basically you're drowning in shit.
You're drowning in shit, and it's really horrific to describe it. But what happens is, BT and Camille are looking for you. Where the fuck is Rose? Why is she late? We're about to go on stage. I heard she went to the toilet. Camille comes around knocking on doors. Rose. Gets to this door. No sound, but she just has a sense. And she breaks open the door, and there's your legs sticking out of the toilet. Sort of like Trainspotting, like you're just a pair of...
A pair of
legs sticking out the toilet, but clearly they're not moving. And
it's not like a heroin hallucination. It's real life.
And Camille immediately knows what's happened. She's dropped near and down the lily. She's got BT. I think Rose has drowned her own head in shit. And people hear this, they start laughing. And I'm there, and I'm going, I don't think it's that funny. I mean, I'm worried about her, but everyone's laughing. And they see the image of your legs sticking out the portal, and they go, that is funny. This was a good gig. And basically, you smash the gig. Like, it's even better than the first gig. I have to get you out of this fucking thing. So I have to actually smash up the portaloo just to get you out. Shit everywhere. A lot of it's like encrusted on you because you've been there quite a while before they found you. I've got a coffin with me because I always take a coffin to latitude. You never know. And so I have to chop you up. All this shit. I'm wearing goggles and a mask and gloves because it's rough. Anyway, get you in the coffin. But there's more of you than I was expecting because of all this fucking sewage attached to you. Stuffed you in. It's absolutely jammed in there. It's ram jammed, right? There's no room. There's only enough room in this coffin for me to slide one DVD into the side with you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. One night, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show the citizens of heaven when it's your movie night, Rose Johnson? Go.
Has someone already taken Dirty Dancing?
I think so.
Okay. Listen, truly...
Mm-hmm. Take Love's Kitchen.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm going to take Love's Kitchen.
That's great. No one else has brought it.
Just because I think you need a bit of light and shade. If everyone is taking incredible films, you have got no context. You have got nothing to compare them to.
You don't know what's good when you don't know what's bad.
And I also think it will be such a nice bonding experience for everyone to laugh at it and make it into this, like, I feel like it will become, like I said, a cult thing.
Yeah.
In heaven.
I love it. I think it's lovely. And I hope you don't feel awkward when the writer-director arrives in heaven. But by that stage, you'll have gone full circle and you'll be like, I actually do think this is the greatest film
ever
made.
By that point, it will be like the most amazing celebrity appearance of all time. Yeah. Everyone will. And it'll be amazing for him because, listen, I've read some reviews of Love Kitchen. They ain't good. But imagine when he comes up to heaven and he gets met.
A hero's
it's like
welcome.
Everything he dreamed of when he made the film that never played out on Earth, he will get. This hero's... It'll be like the end of Titanic, where you know, she's coming and then down the stairs and then everyone's on the stairs, Jack's on the stairs. It'll be like that for this guy, but it'll be loads of people clapping, holding the copy of Love's Kitchen going, bravo, bravo.
We were wrong. Yeah. I love that. That's a happy ending.
That's nice.
That's lovely. Rose Johnson, you've been wonderful. Is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for, listen to, watch or buy in the shops?
Yes, please. I've got a podcast with the other Sketco's Birthday Girls called Birthday Girls House Party.
I love it.
Brad's been on it. And we've got a live podcast that we're doing of our Birthday Girls House Party at the Underbelly in Cavendish Square in London on Saturday, the 21st of August at 5 p.m. And it'll be so fun. It's a mayhem. There'll be games, there'll be chaos, there'll be huge oversharing. If you think I've told some stories on this podcast, just you wait. And we've got Susie Ruffle as our guest.
Amazing.
So it's going to be a great time. So get booking on the Underbelly website, please.
Highly recommend that. And I hope we all get to read your book soon. Rose Johnson, yeah. I love you.
Love you too, Brad.
Have a wonderful death. And I will see you for the screening of Love's Kitchen.
Thank you.
Good day. So that was episode 154. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and ad-free video with Rose Johnson. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but don't write about the show. Write about the film that means the most to you and why. I do read them. I love it. It helps numbers. It's really appreciated. Maureen loves it too. Thank you so much to Rose for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics. Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for a huge guest, an amazing guest. You won't believe who I've got, but I ain't going to tell you yet. So that is it for now. I hope everyone is well. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening. Have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.